And at this time, please help me to welcome our speaker tonight, which is Mickey H. right here from Feet First.
Hello, everybody. My name's Mickey, and I'm an alcoholic. It is an absolute pleasure to be here. This is my home group, so if you know me and you've heard my story, because I don't shut up, I'm sorry that you're going to sit through this for the next 45 minutes. I love AA. I love all of you, the fellowship. This book is by far my most favorite book in my life. It saved my life. So it is an absolute honor to be up here and talk to all of you. I do have a sobriety date. It is September 17th of last year. I have a sponsor. He does know that he's my sponsor. I do call him and ask him many, many questions. He's a very, very good man, very important man in my life. Probably the funniest part was I spent a lot of my early sobriety thanking him. And he would turn to me and say, "Don't thank me, thank God." And I was like, "Dude, you have to take some kind of credit for this." Because he stuck his hand out to a complete stranger and changed my life. That's why I will keep coming back, and that's why I'm up here to speak to all of you. My message of experience, strength, and hope, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. You know, it's really, the longer my sobriety gets, the harder it is for me to look back and realize how lucky I am. So I will start from the beginning. I grew up in a wonderful house. My parents are still married. I think they fall in love more and more every year. I got a younger sister and older brother. And I was given every opportunity as a kid. I was spoiled. I had everything I wanted. And you can see by the look of me that I indulged in food and snacks like it was going out of style. And that's what I did with everything. I was extremely intense. I was in your face, you know, with not in your face in a bad way, in a very good way, because I loved everybody. And I wanted to be with you. I wanted to know you. And, you know, and I've been that way my entire life. And it's definitely, it has gotten a lot more passionate since I got in AA because it saved my life. So I was given every opportunity. My father is from Ireland, so I'm a first-generation Irish boy. And, you know, if you know anything about the Blarney Stone, if you ever go to Ireland, you know, if you kiss the Blarney Stone, it gives you the gift of gab. Well, I am the Irish kid that hopefully if I kiss it, it'll take away my gift of gab because I don't shut up. So, you know, him coming over here, you know, there's that stigmatism of being an alcoholic. And boy, does the alcoholism run deep in my father's family. It runs extremely deep in my mom's side of the family. And, you know, I grew up with that. And I thought that was all normal. I thought alcohol and drinking was normal. Every single night, my parents drink. Every holiday, there's an excuse for a special kind of drink. We're getting into the holiday seasons. You know, one of my fondest memories is, you know, coming home Christmas Eve and my parents busting out, you know, towards the night before Christmas. And we would sit down and they would have this really cool special glass that they poured stuff in and would, like, swirl it around and drink it. And I was like, man, I can't wait till I do that. You know, I cannot wait till I can do that. And that's how it was. Every family, my mom's family's huge. So we got together every month for birthdays, holidays, you name it. And everyone was drinking. It's just what everyone did. I didn't realize as a young kid what it was doing to everybody else. I just saw that it was fun and everyone was doing it. I guess I can't really say I grew up because I'm never going to grow up. I'm a kid at heart. But I grew up. And I got to that age where people started drinking. And I was 16 years old. I went to visit my brother at college, and you know who I was told never drank. And being up there, 5 minutes into being there, I found out the real story. And he's like, "So do you guys want to drink?" I was there with my buddy and was like, "Absolutely." they were drinking Mickey's wide mouth ale. So I thought it was just perfect. It's my name on the bottle, you know, so, you know, bring it, you know. And that was it. And it took off like a rocket ship. You know, my drinking progressed very fast. It went from maybe 1-2 weekends a month to, it was less than a year, and I was drinking and drugging almost every day. When I got into high school, I don't think I was sober for one day of high school. And that's just where this disease takes you. I mean, it's nasty, it's horrible, but that's what it does. So anyway, I worked for my family business. I'm a painter, and I manipulated and took total advantage of that. While all my friends were enjoying summer vacations, I was working for the family business. And I, somewhere after I graduated high school, I had an 11 o'clock curfew. And I would come in at 3:30 in the morning, loaded. And it was the same thing every single night. My mom would be at the top of the stairs screaming at me. My dad would walk out and say, "Babe, let him go. He's got to get some sleep and go to work. And we'll just talk about it when we get home." We get home, we talk about it, I go right back out and do the same exact thing. The insanity of this disease. But I don't have a problem. I'm not an alcoholic. You know, it's just, you know, this is what everybody does. This is what I do. I'm just breaking the rules a little bit. So that went on and on and on. And I, you know, looking back now, I realized how bad I manipulated my parents, because there was nothing they were going to do that was going to stop me from going to work. So all this abusing of alcohol and drugs and manipulating my parents, I didn't care about. I just did what I had to do, which was, "Yes, Mom, I'm sorry, Mom, I won't do it again," so that I could get back out there and do the same exact thing. So, you know, I don't have a problem with alcohol. I'm not an alcoholic, and I go to college. And, well, let's just say my first semester I got a 0-0. And that was a lot of fun coming home and telling my parents about. Came in drunk one night to my dorm, pulled the fire alarm, and the RA outside blamed me for it, and I told them I was going to put them in the hospital. So they kicked me out of the dorms, and I told the school, you know, whatever, and didn't do anything and ended up with a 0-0. So I come home. My parents let me go back. I went back and did the same thing. So I'm not an alcoholic. I don't have a problem. Okay, you know, it was everybody else, you know, wrong place, wrong time, whatever. You know, I mean, we've all got those excuses, right? So I go back to college for my second year. And like I said, all my friends are on summer vacation. They're out having fun. I'm working. So my parents aren't giving me money for school. So all the money I make during the summer is what I got to use for school, for books, for, you know, extra food, all those things. So 6 weeks into my third semester, I have no books. I have been to about 2 classes, and I'm being evicted from my apartment because I got busted throwing a keg party because, you know, I'm awesome. And so, you know, all this alcohol abuse, you know, I'm like, my parents have no idea, you know, because I'm not an alcoholic and I don't have a problem. So they have no idea. So I'm like, I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to go home, stop wasting my parents' money, and tell them I have a problem with alcohol, because I don't have a problem with drugs, so I'm just going to leave that on the side. They don't need to know about that. And I come home and tell them. Well, you know, they knew, and it was pretty obvious that they knew. I'm a blackout drunk, so all those nights that I was drinking and then coming home, you know, my car would be angled a little bit, or maybe it was one wheel was up on the curb, and it's not because I had a Jeep that had 4-wheel drive. I didn't know how it got there. So I came home, and now I'm a young kid at home making $500 a week. Well, I mean, there's no stopping my alcoholism. There's only enhancing it, and that's what I did. And it got really bad to the point that I didn't know that there was a law about drinking and driving. You know, and I didn't know that there was a law about drinking underage. So I got arrested for my first DUI. I was 20 years old. I was in Jersey, blacked out, but I didn't do anything wrong. And I'm not an alcoholic, and I don't have a problem with drinking. I was just unlucky because the cop happened to be there and then watched me swerve over some lines and come back, right? You know, everyone does it. So instead of learning anything from this and, you know, whatnot, my parents held my hand and I did what they told me to do. It was a slap on the wrist. And 30 days later, I got my license back and I was off to the races again. So at this point, you know, my parents aren't going to pay for school anymore because I already burned that bridge, right? I have no money because I'm spending it on all my extracurricular activities. And, well, then I guess I'm just going to work and I'm going to be a millionaire working for my dad as a painter. Let me tell you, you're not going to become a millionaire being a painter, especially in this economy, all right? So anyway, back then, I got lots of money. So what am I doing? I'm drinking and then I'm driving. So I got arrested for my second DUI in 99, 2 years later. And I got 30 days house arrest, slap on the wrist. This kid doesn't have a problem. He's not an alcoholic. I agreed with him. I'm like, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't have a problem. So we go on, right? Life goes on. I get my driver's license back. You know, I'm of age now, so I don't have to worry about that underage stuff anymore. And I moved to Colorado. I come home, and I meet this girl. And, man, life is good. I'm making money. I got this girl. You know, it couldn't get any better, right? Oh, it gets better because I got arrested for my third DUI. And I went to jail for 14 months for it. But I don't have a problem with alcohol, and I'm not an alcoholic, right? I just got caught because there just happened to be a cop, you know, that got called by somebody who was following me because I was swerving and hitting curbs. But I don't have a problem with alcohol. So I got to go to jail. I'm told that, you know, it'll look real good if I go to therapy. So here's the control factor and the insanity factor of what an alcoholic of the hopeless variety like myself does. I go to therapy. I tell the therapist, I'm not going to stop drinking, but you need to teach me how to stop blacking out and getting behind the wheel. What is that? You know, I'm now telling them, right? Because this is just to look good for court. So I get into jail, and I get on work release. And all I do is see these guys coming back stumbling over tables. And I'm like, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to get out to work, so I'm not going to be stuck in here. I'm going to have a couple drinks and then come back, right? Well, it didn't take long before I got in trouble. And I thought that was it. I thought they were going to max me out, and my girlfriend was going to leave me, and my life is over for the first time. I caught a lucky break, so what do I do? The insanity of this disease and what it does to our head, I move to other things that don't smell and don't show up on a breathalyzer because I'm not going to go back to jail sober. I mean, right? That's normal. You don't go back to jail sober on work release. So that's what I do until I realize how retarded I'm being, right? I'm sorry. Until I realize how stupid I'm being about this. So I'm like, okay, I need to just stop everything and just get out. That's all I got to do is just stop everything and get out. I'm not an alcoholic. I don't have a problem with drinking. Just get out. So I get out, and I become comfortable with my PO, and I start drinking. I'm court-ordered to go to AA, and I go to AA, and I sit in the back. My head's down. I walk up to the guy at the end, get him to sign a paper, and leave. And I go home, and I drink, and I drug. You know, head full of AA, belly full of beer. It's not going to get you anywhere. Oh, it will get you somewhere else. And I did get there again. So there I am, you know, thinking everything's great. You know, I took a hostage. I'm still with this girl. And I don't like to only say that I took a hostage, but I tortured this woman. And I tortured her for 10 years. And God bless her for staying with me. Because she told me that she would divorce me if I ever got arrested again. And I was like, it's never going to happen again. We had two kids. You know, life is great. I got my own painting company. And I get arrested again for my fourth DUI. Because I'm not an alcoholic and I don't have a problem with drinking. I'm just unlucky. Well, I got arrested for my fourth DUI speeding. on the way to the airport to pick my wife, two kids, and mother-in-law up, who I hadn't seen for 10 days. And I didn't care how drunk I was or how mad my wife got at me. I just had to get there. And so instead of my wife walking out of baggage claim and me sitting there waiting for them, she called my cell phone and Officer Keeble picked up the phone and said, "No, Mrs. Hurley, your husband's not coming to pick you up. He's being arrested for a DUI." And I sat there and listened to the whole thing. And for things, the way the law's written, I got released that night. And on the drive home was the first time in my life that I thought about killing myself. Because my life's going to be over. My wife promised me she would divorce me. No more white picket fence. No kids. No happy marriage. None of that. My life is over. Because, by the way, I am an alcoholic, and I do have a problem with drinking. That is the first night that I know God entered my life. Because when I woke up in the morning, I realized that was the most selfish thing that I could do. My kids did not deserve to not have a father because I didn't want to put them through this. This is something I need to deal with. These are the consequences of my actions and finally fessing up to the fact that I am an alcoholic, I do have a problem with drinking, and I need help. It was extremely tough in the very beginning. And looking back now, I was extremely silly about it because the thought of a drink, not the sight of it, just the thought of it, made me want to vomit in my mouth. Because I have these two little kids, and I'm about to go back to jail. I'm about to lose my license. I'm going to lose my company. I'm going to lose my house. I'm going to lose my wife. I'm going to lose everything. So just the thought of it made me want to vomit. And I didn't do anything about it. And I was sober for 32 days. And I called my wife on the phone and was like, "Babe, she works in front of a computer." And I was like, "You need to find me a meeting because I've been sober for 32 days. And I do not feel good." And she's like, "Well, there's this meeting right down the street, which will be real good for you when you lose your license because you can walk to it." And I was like, "I like the sounds of that. I like the way you're thinking. Let's go." So because I know everything and I'm in AA before, right, I'm like hoping I'm walking into an open discussion, whatever, because it's all about me. So I'm going to raise my hand because I'm loud. I don't shut up. And I'll be like, "My name's Mickey. I'm an alcoholic and I need help." Well, I walk in and it's a steps group. A resentment right there on the spot. This sucks. I can't believe this is what I got to listen to a step. This isn't about me. So I meet these awesome guys in there. After the meeting's over, we're standing out front. And, 45 minutes later, I'm still talking to these guys. They're awesome dudes. Love them to death. Still see all of them. And we exchange phone numbers. We talk about going to a meeting on Saturday, and so on and so forth. And this guy says to me, I tell him about my resentment for this steps group, right? And he says to me, "Well, I haven't been to this meeting in 6 months. And yeah, it sucks. It's a steps group. But you know what? Maybe God put me here to meet you." And I was like, "Wow, that's pretty cool." And I'm okay with the God thing because my father's a former priest. And so I've always had religion in my life. I've always had spirituality. It was just a matter of it coming out of me, right? So I'm okay with that. And I realized that that's what he's comfortable with. And this guy just spent 45 minutes talking to me outside. So I'm okay with that. So I go home. And before I even pull in the driveway, one of the other guys I'm with calls me. And I'm like, "Dude, this guy must have butt-dialed me or something, right?" So I'm like, I pick it up and I was like, I live 2 minutes from the meeting, right? I can walk to it. I'm like, "Jimmy, what's up?" He's like, "Hey, how you doing? How was your ride home?" I was like, "It's good." And he's like, "Well, sleep well tonight, man. You got people that care about you and want to help you out." And I'm like, "Thank you." And I was like, "Dude, this is awesome." Weight lifted off my back instantaneously. I hadn't slept through the night in 32 nights, right? Slept through the night that night. So I go down my basement. I have a smoke with my wife. And I tell her everything that happens. So my dad's a former priest. My wife is about as close to an atheist as you get. So when we walk into the church, holy water starts to boil, right? And I'm stuck in the middle of this thing. So I'm sitting there and I tell her everything. except for what this gentleman said to me in the parking lot. And she turned to me and said, well, maybe you were there to meet him. And I instantly had a chill. I just got a chill go up my back now. Every time I talk about it, that is when I knew this is what I needed. This is going to work, and this is who I want to be with. And that was a huge moment in my life. It means a lot to me to look back and think that, you know, this stranger put his hand out to me, and I can stand up here now and speak to all of you about what's happened in my life. I gave you my sobriety date. I got about 14 months and a week. I never thought that an alcoholic like me of the hopeless variety could ever do that. I didn't think there was anything even remotely close to that. But that's what this book, this fellowship, these steps can do for all of you and what it's doing for me day by day. So I start my spree of sobriety, right? Because now I got a new life and everything's going to get better. I'm going to get the money. I'm going to get, you know, the fancy car. I'm going to do all that. Oh, but I got to go back to jail. That's right. So I'm preparing for jail. You know, I'm projecting, you know? Really bad thing to do, right? Doesn't matter how many times my sponsor tells me, don't project. You have no control, no idea. I project all of this. And what happens? I'm completely wrong about all of it. I ended up going to jail 4 months earlier than I thought I was going to. I ended up getting less time than I was planning for. So all that fear, all of that control was just blown up in my face. And there's my sponsor to laugh at me and tell me, see, I told you, dude. I told you. So on Sunday, March 17th, my sponsor shows up on Sunday and gives me my six-month anniversary coin. Monday morning, he shows up at 7:30 to drive me to jail. And I walked into jail with a couple things of clothes and my big book. And I walked in with a smile on my face because this was not going to beat me. This was not going to get me. This is nothing. This is it's a pebble that all I got to do is get by. This is it. Well, people up in jail, they don't like it when you smile. And they don't like it when you're happy, but I was, and you weren't going to defeat me. And I walked out 30 days later with a bigger smile on my face, because now I get to start the rest of my life. It's an amazing thing. You know, there was a couple announcements made, and we were at a meeting earlier that, you know, all I want to do is spread the message. All I want to do is step 12, because that's what keeps us sober. And then I get to help somebody else out that's a complete stranger to me. When I was in jail, there was one AA commitment filled when I was there. And I walked into that meeting like a ball of fire. And I brought my big book with me. And, you know, this guy, he had 4 years sobriety. And there was another dude came up with me. We both had big books. And so he's shocked right off the bat, because in the 3 years he's been doing these commitments, no one's ever brought a big book. And now two guys come walking up with big books, right? And I am on fire. I'm ready to talk. I'm ready to, you know, serenity prayer, Lord's prayer, every prayer. I don't care. Let's do some AA. And he's like, so what do you guys want to do? And we read how it works. And I was like, why don't we just keep reading the chapter? Well, I don't, you know, the chapter's what, like 13, 17 pages long? I think I read 12 of those pages. Because I just wanted AA. I just wanted to be talking AA with other people. So I'm in there and I'm working with people, because that's what I did. I went through the steps and I'm working with people, and it was such a wonderful thing. I'm incarcerated. I can't see my wife. I can't see my kids. What am I going to do? Sit down and be depressed? No, I'm going to spread the message as best I can, you know? And I got to help a bunch of guys out in there. I got to see them start smiling. I got to see them. I helped a guy start, you know, his fourth step. Unfortunately, I left before he could finish it. It took him a really long time to even get started. You know, but they all have my numbers. And, you know, hopefully they'll call me when they get out. But that was just such an incredible experience to have that. So anyway, these, you know, commitments, and you got to have all this sobriety time now. It's getting longer and longer, because all I want to do is bring a meeting in, you know. So I was so excited to be there for one. All I want to do is bring one in. I want to bring my energy, what I've been taught from complete strangers into other strangers. But they're making it really hard, you know. So I will wait. I will bide my time. 2016, baby. You'll see me in Montgomery County and Bucks County. You know, I never wanted to go to jail, and all I want to do is go back now. I just want to go back. So anyway, you know, I'm doing the steps with my sponsor. Life is fantastic. It's getting better. I'm on this pink cloud, and all he says to me is, you better have a pink parachute. Well, you know, I didn't realize what he meant until, you know, that high started coming down. And it happens. You know, everybody thinks that people come into AA, they get sober, they get rich, they get cars, they get, you know, money, girls, everything. No. I get sober, I go to jail, I get out of jail, and now my house is in foreclosure. You know, so I'm on this pink cloud, I'm getting out of jail, my life's great, I'm sober, and now I'm about to lose my house, right? Well, no, I'm not going to worry about it because I've been given the tools to deal with these things when they come up. I've been given those tools. I can fight the fear. You know, I can get through anything, you know, like a normal person. You know, I thought I was normal before, but I wasn't. But now I've been given the tools because of this book, because of the fellowship. I have the tools to do that. And how I got there was working these steps with my sponsor. And, you know, step one was real easy. I was in a jail cell right after a police officer had talked to my wife, on my knees, talking to him, saying, it's just me and you. I need some help because I thought my life was over. You know, two, you know, I didn't think I was insane. I thought that's what everyone did. Doesn't everyone go to jail, get on work release, and drink before they go back? Right? Isn't that what you do? I mean, everybody drinks and drives. I mean, how else are you going to get home? This is normal stuff. It's not. It's not normal stuff, you know? Step three was an honor. I got to get on my knees at an altar, actually, in this church upstairs with my sponsor and read the third step prayer. There was no big, bright light, you know, and you know, Jesus came down and talked to me, but my heart was smiling, you know, because I'm making progress now on something that matters. You know, step four and five, four I couldn't wait to do, because I was that dude that nobody's ever going to know what I did. No way, I'm taking that to the grave. But I find out that if I do, I'm going to be in trouble, right? So I'm writing all this stuff down. I'm like, man, this guy's never heard anything like this before. And I'm writing all this stuff down. I can't wait to tell him. I'm all excited. Well, he gives me like a little homework to do. And I read four over and over again. He gave me some worksheets and all this stuff, right? And I realize that I'm at fault for all of this. I realize that I am at fault for everything that I have held a resentment towards. Everything that I've been, you know, like, I can't believe this person did this to me. Like, I played a part in this. I was 100% at fault for all of this. So, you know, like the fifth step people get real excited about. It's like this big thing, right? Well, I'm going to blow my sponsor's mind up. I'm going to rain on his parade. So he comes down my basement. We start. I'm like, before we get started, I just want to tell you, I know that I'm at fault for all this. So, you know, I guess I just took all the fun out of, you know, you making fun of me. And he's like, well, don't worry, because I'm going to forget about all this stuff in 2 hours. So it's not no big, you know, happy parade and, like, you know, this is huge. I'm going to forget about it all. So we sat there and we did it. And I told him everything. And he started laughing at me. And he laughed because one of my last resentments, he's like, okay, who's next? You know. And I was like, my lawyer for my third DUI. He starts laughing, right? Because he's like, really, did you play a part in that? And I was like, yeah. You know, I hired him. I drank and drove. I got caught. I went to jail. You know, and I'm holding a resentment against my lawyer because what he told me didn't happen. I did everything to get there to do that, right? It was just unbelievable. You know, what an incredible, you know, feeling to be able to get all that off your chest, to be able to deal with all that. Six and seven, you know, they really do need, I don't know if you can make them longer. I mean, they're two paragraphs, but you know what? I read the seven-step prayer every single morning. You know, it's there. I mean, that's awesome. It reminds me every single day of my character defects and the fact that I live my life a different way now. And that God is there with me, helping me with my character defects, because, boy, I have a lot of them. I really, really do. You know, 8 and 9, you know, I couldn't wait to get to my amends list. When I got sober, because I'd been to AA before, back when I wasn't an alcoholic and back when I didn't have a problem drinking, right? And so when I came in this time, I sat there and told my wife, I am not making amends to your sister, and I'm not making amends to this lady, Barb. Because I never did anything wrong to them when I was drinking, right? So then I start going through the work, and I realize that these two people need to be number one and two on my list, okay? If they need to be number one and two, boy, the resentments I held against them. So we do, I do eight. We, you know, he pressed me for nine, and I make a list of, you know, my easy, my difficult, and my impossible. Right, put my parents right at the top of the easy because I've destroyed them for 20 years of abusing drugs and alcohol. They've held my hand and babied me through all of it. So this is going to be a cakewalk. Now I'm going to go in there. Done. I'm sorry. See ya. It's the hardest thing I ever did. Hardest thing I ever did. I actually got mad and yelled at my father before I even started the amends. And I walked outside and I prayed and I read the book and I prayed and I read the book and I went back in and I 10-stepped my father before I 9-stepped them. I mean, the insanity of this disease. I mean, I still just can't let things go. So that was probably like my greatest experience, you know, with my amends. I'm still in the process of them. Some people are hard to get, but I do not willingly put them off because I don't want to do them. I will not do that. I will not jeopardize my sobriety for selfish things. I absolutely will not. My sobriety is number one in my life. And when I sat in my basement with my sponsor, you know, 2 months after being sober, you know, he said, your kids and your wife are the most important thing to you. And he said, what's the most important thing in your life? And I said, my wife and kids. And he said, no, your sobriety is. And I was like, but this guy's crazy. My sobriety is not the most important thing. My wife and kids are. It took a very long time for me to understand that and realize that. But once that realization came about, that if I don't make sobriety my number one thing, I won't be there for my wife and my kids. You know, that's what happens. When you're an alcoholic of a hopeless variety like myself, you either end up dead in institutions or jails. Well, I've been to two of them, okay? So, you know, let's get on with it. Let's do what I got to do. So 10-step was awesome because I 10-step before I even did a 9-step with my parents. And, you know, I'm full of character defects. People make me angry. People do things that, you know, I don't like or whatnot, and that's okay. It's going to happen in your life. It's going to happen. But you do this work, you are now given the tools to take care of those problems, right? So that they don't build up and then cause a problem for you in the future. My 11-step, I'll be honest with you because that's what we do here. Because we're not honest, we're going to go back out. And if I go back out, I will die. I do not meditate as much as I should. But I do pray, and I pray an awful lot. I do in the morning, you know, I got a ton of prayers in there. 3, 7, 11, Serenity, Lord, the St. Francis prayer. Man, I love those things. And it's unbelievable. And I get to experience some incredible things because of that. I'm a stay-at-home dad now, and sometimes I don't get to pray first thing in the morning. And so I'll go downstairs, you know, second thing in the morning, 10 minutes later, get on my knees, you know, on the couch, and my daughter or son will come up from behind me and hug me. They won't say anything. They're quiet. And they'll come up and hug me why I'm reading these prayers, why I'm reading the St. Francis prayer. And it's the most amazing thing. I cried like it's going out of style. I got no problem admitting it. You know, I got to dress up tonight. So I was like, man, I'm busting out my best gear. So it's purple, baby, and I don't care. I'm rocking it, right? You know? And I don't care about crying now. I don't care about crying because it's awesome. Because I'm usually crying for some very joyous things. Probably one of the best tears of joy I've had since I've been sober was I was working down in Maryland. This was back when I had a driver's license. And I came home just in enough time to get showered, kiss my kids and wife, and run out to a meeting. Hadn't seen them for 4 days, right? And I'm running out the door, and as I'm running out the door, I'm like, babe, I am so sorry that I'm running out right now. I can't spend time with you, but it's going to pay off. It's going to pay off in the end, I promise. And she turned and looked at me and said, it's already paying off. And I cried the whole way to the meeting. I was like, this woman, I tortured this woman. What is she doing staying with me? And now she's giving me, like, she's making me cry, you know? It's these amazing things that happen to us, you know, in sobriety. I can definitely work on my meditation. If you were here last week, I got some great stuff from that, from the gentleman that was up here, and I hope to expand on my meditation for sure. I guess it's going to be a real act of patience too, considering I'm a stay-at-home dad, because I'm crazy, I'm loud, I'm excitable, I'm full of energy, and my kids are the same way. You know, so you know, we'll see. I might have to get up at like 5 and work on that, but I will. I will work on that. 12. Step 12 is, that's where it's at. That's where it's at. You go through this, you find your higher power, your spirituality grows. This is what we need to survive. But 12 is what we do. We help out the next sick and suffering. I helped some people when I was incarcerated, right? I haven't heard from any of them. I don't know if they're out or not. I hope that when they do come out, they do call me, because I would love to help them. But I have the honor of working. I'm working with two guys right now. And it's funny, because they thank me. And I turn around and say, don't thank me, thank God. You know, because it's not about me. You know, and all this time, that, like, I was just like, my sponsor's crazy. Why won't he take a thank you? Well, now I understand why. Because I'm just doing for you what was done for me. You know, a complete stranger put his hand out. And that was it. You know, when I work with people, you know, we open up the big book to how it works. And I ask them to read step one. I ask, you know, what's the most important word in that step? And 9 out of 10 times, you know, it's admitted, powerless, unmanageable. I say, no, it's not. It's we. It's the first word in there. Because you're not alone. You don't have to do this by yourself. There is people out there that want to help you, that will help you, that become your family. And you need to understand that. You know, it's huge, because, you know, if you're an alcoholic of the hopeless variety like I was and still am, you know, you can't do it on your own. You can't. You need help. So anyway, you know, I get to work with these guys, and you know, and I get to do service. You know, I'm part of that. I don't know if you remember, I was that same guy standing over there and made the announcement about the 33rd anniversary meeting. Yeah. You know, I didn't realize service, you know, goes such a long way, you know, to help you stay sober, but also goes a long way that you keep doing the service, because I've been chairing this meeting for like 7 of the last 9 months. But I won't let it go, because it was the first meeting I walked into, you know, and my life changed that day. I don't, if you helping other people out is picking them up to bring them to a meeting, which I get lots of rides because I can't drive, you know, that's fantastic. You're helping another alcoholic out. I didn't realize that when I lost my license, and I lost it for a week before I went to jail. And people were like, oh, I'll drive you. And I was like, no, it's okay. I can walk to these meetings. But I'm taking away from their opportunity to help a fellow alcoholic out. You know, and you know, I didn't realize these kind of things. I need people to help me out with these things. You know, that's why it's we. I also, you know, when I get to work with these people, it's this is a suggested program. They're all suggestions to help us out, right? I tell them it's a very, very easy program, but it is hard as hell to do, because you have to put everything you have into this, because if you don't, the chances of you going back out are great. And you know what? You go to 3 different places. I've been to 2, and I don't want to die. That's number 3. You know, so what you put into it is what you're going to get out of it. And, man, I put everything I have into it. I put everything I have into, you know, being a better father, a better husband, showing up. You know, my kids are, they're 5.5 and 2.5. And I will always be a drunk. I'll always be an alcoholic. But day by day, they don't see me with a drink in my hand. And for that, I am grateful. And I am reminded of that every single day. Because I do now have the luxury of spending more time with my kids than I ever imagined I'd be able to. You know, somebody like me, you know, I was a big shot, owned my own painting company, you know, spending money left and right. Well, now I don't have any income coming in, you know. It says in the 9-step prayers, you know, financial insecurity will leave you. And, you know, I thought at first that meant that, like, God was going to show up with a $10,000 check and I'd be okay, right? So, like, I'm waiting for him to show up with his check. That's not what it's about. It's just the fear. You know, it's just the fear that I didn't realize that I had. You know, I told my sponsor when I first came in, you know, I'm a train wreck for AA. I have a guilty conscience. I'm a people pleaser, and I got OCD. I'm like, this ain't going to work, man. Well, you know, I didn't realize that, like, being a people pleaser was only bad when you put them before you. You know, which is what I've realized now. You know, that I can help people out. I can please people as long as I'm taking care of myself first. And I'm not being selfish. It might sound selfish, but I'm not. Because if I don't take care of myself, I won't be there to help the next sick and suffering out. I won't be there to help out my daughter and my son. And I certainly won't be there to help out my wife, who I tortured for 10 years. And God bless her. She's still with me. And it's still, it gets better and better every day. You know? So I try and pass this message on. You know, I do what I can. I take the commitments when I can. Because service is a great way to stay sober. It's been ingrained in my head from day one. I have a sponsor that will call me up and say, hey, what are you doing tonight? I'd be like, I'm not sure. You know, maybe playing the memory game with my kids. He'd be like, you're speaking tonight. I'd be like, all right, let's go. And that's what happened tonight. You know, you never know when it's going to happen. That's why I can't not pray every morning. Because I certainly are not going to come into a meeting without praying and talking to God and be like, dude, help me out, you know. Speak to these people through me if I don't practice these principles in all my affairs. Every morning praying, every night praying, and always being there to stick my hand out to help the next sick and suffering. Because that's what this is all about. It's what a stranger did for me. It was about 13 months ago, almost exactly today. And I get to stand up here and speak to you about with a message of experience, strength, and hope. I hope I did that. My name is Mickey, and I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for letting me share.